August 21, 2023. It's a Walk for Pedro show.
Thank you.
Woodruff Show. Happy Monday. Started off with an excerpt from John Coltrane playing on November 18, 1961. I want to talk about you. And then we had Hostage Pageant with the frown on your sister's face because of those software engineers from Estonia with their Skype invention I got with me. Shane Church, welcome aboard.
Hey, Watt. Thanks for having me.
Absolute. And right away, we got to give credit to Scotty Irvin for making the connect.
Absolutely. Cheers to Scotty.
Absolute. Had a lot of cats he knows in the last couple of weeks. And, well, how do you know him?
Through the noise scene. Somewhat regionally in a similar area as well. Southwest Virginia for me and bordering North Carolina area for Scotty, a couple hours away, 2 or 3 hours-ish. And, yeah, we met doing our thing through the noise scene, playing on, you know, the same bills probably, wow, he could probably correct me, but upwards of 10 years ago, I would say.
Okay. No collabs?
No, not he and I. Maybe that's
not
something that we can eventually make happen.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Because if Watt could do it with Scotty, then you can't do it. In fact, he just sent me drums for round two with the Spirit of Hamlet. But let's talk about your journey through music.
Sure.
As far back as you can go. Please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Well, honestly, my earliest memories, just in general, pertain to life, were, you know, having to do with music. It seems like my first recollections were always based on, you know, an album or a time or something in my life. Even my parents telling me that before I even have recollections, you know, that when I was, like, in diapers, that was obsessed with certain records, would literally, you know, kind of, like, hobble over to the turntable and just skip the tone arm across the surface of the disc if it was something I didn't want to hear, you know. Obviously, so young, didn't even know how to operate the tone arm. And then, you know, as I grew older, I got involved in school band. And at the same time was sort of like doing this parallel thing where I would go to school and study in band. And I was involved in different facets of school band as well. Concert band, marching band, jazz band, the whole nine.
Let me ask about the pad you grew up in. Was there any musical instruments besides that tone arm?
No. My dad, you know, made a modest attempt at guitar. He had an acoustic, which I still actually is my acoustic to this day. He gave up, you know, like a lot of people
do. Oh, so there
do.
Was one. And you jumped on the guitar when you were a boy, or did you wait?
Well, you know what was funny about it? It was like, I think he actually handed that down to my uncle first, one of his brothers. And so I didn't even, like, get it right away, you know?
Okay.
And eventually, once I was able to at least, you know, somewhat proficiently play, then he was basically like, hey, I think, you need this. And instead of me. So my uncle gave it back to me. The first thing I ever really remember doing, you know, was literally beating on, like, pieces of luggage and
percussion.
You know, pots and pans and that whole thing,
you know? Yeah, percussion. Okay. Well, guitar, you know, used to be in the rhythm section and those swing band shit, and so kind of a percussion, the way you play it, right? You strike the string. And you mentioned that you were in the school band and stuff. What did you work in the school band?
So in concert bands, I did a mix of brass and percussion. I played trombone as well as, like, timpanis and stuff like that.
Okay, the
in
bone.
Concert band.
I'm interested in the bone because that's bass clef.
Yeah, bass clef, that's what I learned to read first, you know, treble clef came later for me, I read bass first. It's like a fretless bass in a way, right? Like there's no defined, it's not defined by keys, you know, it's a slide position.
And what I heard too from my buddies, if you were in the marching band, I don't know if you were in the marching band, but it's a little easier because the big mouthpiece, shit like trumpet and French horn and shit, kind of tough.
Yeah, the way they basically, you know, the director sort of seated us, if you will, was based on those mouthpieces, right? Like, you know, how you were able to produce sound, like, what, you know, the small one with the trumpet, up to the larger scale of the trombone and on up to, like, the tuba and stuff, you know.
Believe it or not, I'm trying to, you know, I got this euphonium on tour. I thought it was baritone home, but I learned it's a euphonium. Like, 30 years ago, and I'm just trying to learn it now. God damn, is it hard. I'm sorry.
Some of it is really challenging, especially like trying to revisit it after some time. You're just like, what the hell's going on right now with this instrument, you know?
Let me ask you this. What was the first record you bought with your own money?
Wow. I've bought so many records of the year and continue to. That's a really tough one, Watt. I will say that I remember the first records that I was, you know, gifted that I had and that I played a shit ton.
Well, I ask you that because when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money. So I'm curious, like, what would you spend your money on?
That was it. It was hand-me-downs for me.
Right, right.
You know, and it was fucking Alice Cooper, Love It to Death.
Oh, yeah. And, now, did you have the one?
It's so fun,
did you have
you know?
The one? Did you have the one where you could
see
his thumb? Or do you have the one with the airbrush thumb out?
It was the bordered, like, you know, where it's got it censored out. You know?
Yeah, because the first ones you could see the thumb.
Yeah, and it was like a full, like the 12-inch, the whole sleeve was covered with that image, and then they started putting that white border on the top and bottom. And I mean, it was cool, too, because my uncle, another uncle, my maternal side of the family, not the one who ties back into the guitar story, drew a little caricature of my aunt in some of those, like, that white blank border. So that kind of stuff, you know, was a hand-me-down from a family member. It's just burning my brain, you know. Kiss Alive 1 was another big one for me. Love It to Death, still constant rotation. Kiss, not so much these days for me, just personally, but, you know, I have to acknowledge that the sound of Ace Frehley's guitar, the bends, the weird kind of, like, phrasing, I was just like, I want to do something that sounds like that. And that was huge for me. And then there was an image that was really pivotal for me. It wasn't even a record. It was something I probably, you know, yanked out of some centerfold of some rock mag or something. But it was a centerfold of Jimmy Page. And it was in this purple, you know, backlight, completely, like, washed out in this purple. And I love purple. It's one of my favorite colors. And so that immediately struck me. And this side of him with the bow, you know, like, fully extended back, not playing it with a pick, not playing it, quote-unquote, conventionally. And I'm like, I don't even know what that sounds like when he does that, but that looks so incredibly sick, you know. So
did you ever hear The Creation?
What's that? I'm sorry.
The Creation. It was an England band managed by the same cat at the time who was managing The Who, Shel Tamley. That's where Jimmy Page got the idea, because that cat played with a bow.
Oh, so he did it prior? The dude from The Creation did it prior to that. Oh, okay. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, that's okay. Nothing against Jimmy Page and nothing against your memory. That's probably that purple you're talking about was probably blacklight, because when I was a boy, that was a big dealio. You would paint the inside. I never did, but older friends, they paint their bedroom black and you put up these fucking posters, fluorescent posters, and the blacklight would look trippy.
Yeah, when I was growing up, I'm 47, so I remember those. You know, you go to Spencer's and shit, and they still have those. They're like kind of like textured, like velvety kind of feeling. Sure. Yeah.
A lot of times, MC Escher things and shit like that. Things you don't let you trip out on when you're smoking mochi.
Heady stuff. Yeah, heady stuff.
Let me ask you this. What was the first? What was your first gig that you saw?
Oh, first gig was probably Dokken and Loverboy at a local stadium here. You know, it was the time. Like I said, I, you know, grew up in the 80s and was into all the hair metal shit, you know. And, that was one of the first – that was probably my first show. I was 12 years old.
All right. We were 13 and we saw T-Rex, me and D-Boone.
I mean, way cooler than
– That was our first game. Yeah, but I asked that question because a lot of times being a boy and shit, you don't even pick, right? You brought into the situation.
But that was it, you know? That was it. I mean, obviously couldn't drive myself there, right? So, I mean, it's just like you're at the mercy of like, hey, you know, will you take me to the show? And, oh, who is it? Yeah, sure,
yeah,
cool.
Get this.
You know?
D. Boone's pop sat with us.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I sat with my folks.
Okay. Look, you gave me some other Hostage Pageant. A great band name, Hostage Pageant. We got to learn about this. Absorb, Deteriorate, and Shatter. Let's listen.
Thank you. much it to be for the tomorrow. Some say they don't know.
They don't know.
Ask so much is to be for the tomorrow. Some say they don't know.
They don't know.
Some say, they don't know. Them acting out of order. Thinking of some lean up in a corner. Thinking of some lean up in a tenement yard. Enough of them I feel it in a pressure. Rude boy I feel it in a pressure. Rude boy I feel it in a harder's. Rude boy I feel it in a tenement yard. Enough of them feel it in a pressure. Ask them what is to be for day tomorrow. Some say, leave me alone, oh me. Ask them what is to be for day tomorrow. Some say, leave me alone.
Leave me alone.
Some say, whoa. They don't know. Ooh.
World.
Watch for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with Hostage Paget doing Absorb, Deteriorate, and Shatter. Then Creation Rebel, brand new. These guys haven't recorded in, what, 30-something years? Under Pressure, guided by voices. This guy talking about Dayton, Ohio. Yeah. Bob Pollard, right? He puts out an album every other month. This man puts man, P and prolific. Power. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. And also, guys, say his guitar man, Doug Gillard, you know, to keep coming up. It reminds me of Greg Sage, where, like, you know, those first three Wiper albums, kind of the same, but still bitching.
Yeah, somehow putting, like, a fresh spin on the same, like,
right,
core.
Right.
Yeah, it takes more talent than most people would probably
right.
think.
Right, yeah. Dayton guy singing with an England accent, too. Trippy.
Yeah, I know. You can get a lot of Bobby P, man.
Well, he made jokes about it. He said he would sound like a hick if he didn't do that.
He's like, that's what I listened to. It's, you know, just, it was natural for me to emulate
that.
No,
he was a teacher a long time, and he did music on the, okay. Hostage Paget, finally, with Loss of Definition. So, now, I'm not talking about after school, like graduating, but after school in the afternoon. Did you get into the garage band, basement band, bedroom band thing?
Absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, it's what I was kind of alluding to with the parallel universe thing. Would be at school learning this academic approach, you know, reading music and playing jazz and classical stuff. And then at home, I would come home and teach myself by ear how to play along with punk records, you know, some records you were on, SST shit. And metal, you know, and was like sort of approaching it, not necessarily like quote unquote garage rock, like stylistically, but it was definitely in the garage and it was all DIY and self-taught, you know, driving the folks crazy, that kind of thing.
What about buddies? Did you put it together with some little ensembles?
Yeah, definitely playing with, you know, friends, cover bands, you know, the whole normal trajectory that so many of us that do this have been down, you know, but, you know, doing the rites of passage and paying the dues, if you will.
Believe it or not, I have cats who just when they started playing, started writing. They didn't copy songs off records like me and D. Boone. They actually started writing. I think that's one of the consequences of the movement. I'm not talking about guys like, you know, San Pedro High Class of 76, but...
No, sure, I know, I see what you're, and I fully agree
in
with
fact,
that.
We didn't know, get this, Shane, we didn't know one cat in those days, the 70s, even the best guy, what was his name, I can't remember his name right now, but even the guy who could play the best didn't write their own stuff, just people didn't do it.
Yeah, that concept wasn't really something I was aware of until I probably got, you know, late teens, early 20s, and started recording my own stuff at home, like on a 4-track, you know.
Oh, what was it, a cassette?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm still a big cassette guy, still record, even like some of my current bands we record on, you know, a 4-track Tascam.
Did any of these bands go beyond prac and jam? Did any of them do gigs?
Yeah.
Tell me about your first
the
gig.
The first band I did, man, I can't even remember the name. I think it was something like Poison Ivy or something like that. But we, you know, I grew up in rural Virginia on the Kentucky state line. And, you know, there's just no, I mean, it's just, there's nothing there, especially in the 90s when I was still there and in high school. And so there was a place called Pikeville, Kentucky, a place called Marlowe's Country Palace. And I mean, seriously, you can't make this up. Straight Out Blues Brothers, Chicken Wire. BYOB kind of deal. So it's a little bit of like a, you know, a lawless feel. And so we roll in there as teenagers, you know, I think, I don't know that I was able to drive yet. I guess I would have been at least 15, maybe 16. But you know, yeah, some of the other guys were at least old enough to drive. We pile in this guy's like Trans Am. There's like six of us with our hard showcases and everything. And we go to this gig and like, you know, I'm terrified. I was fronting it. I always hated fronting acts, still do. And, I was by default the guy that had to like, you know, do vocals and everything. And so we're backstage and it's this little bit of like a battle of the band scenario. And some of the guys are like, what do you guys usually do? And we're like, well, we're, you know, we play metal covers, but we kind of worked up some different shit for this because we don't, you know, want to die. And, they were like, oh, you know, we do mostly heavy stuff too. And we were thinking the same thing, but you know, like maybe we'll just do it. And, you know, we're like, well, go for it. So they went on first and people hated them. I mean, they were throwing stuff. And so I was just at that point petrified. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I can't go in front of this crowd, you know, but anyway, somehow mustered that up and we went up and played our little 3-song set. And of course, you know, this is like a Roadhouse vibe, right? And we opened with ZZ Top Tush and we had them, you know. So it was like somehow dodged that bullet and had pulled this off successfully. And the rush from that, coupled with, you know, just that first time of playing in front of an audience and having that energy sent back to you.
You know, Billy didn't sing that. It was Dusty.
Yeah, I know. Okay. And did a killer fucking job on that.
I like Fandango and Tres Hombres. Those two albums are so fucking bitch.
Hombres and that self, that first album or self-titled, you know, that, those are
oh,
my
yeah,
favorites.
Yeah, and the Mississippi Mud. No.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, Rio Grande. It's all solid, man. That early shit, you can't knock it, you know?
That's what it's called. Yeah, my memory. But, yeah, later, a little later on, I could knock it. But still, I got to play with them with the Stooges and get to meet them personally, and all three of them were really bitching. Dusty Hill had, like, 10 thumbs. He had the littlest fingers, and he played so good, man. I was like a firefly. He was beautiful. He was really beautiful. And Billy and Frank, too, was really kind to me. So you're going to say that first gig was a success?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was kind of wild. You know, we'd come out of there and, like I said, really kind of lawless sort of place in the hills of Kentucky. And, like, our hubcaps are stolen off the guy's car. And, you know, I think we had some gear stolen out of the green room and stuff. But it was, yeah, I guess you could, by all intents and purposes, call it a success. And
yeah,
that pretty much summed it up for me, you know. After
you
that, I was
call,
like, this is what I always want to do.
You the stolen thing the donate. Now, here's the trip. You were playing guitar and singing.
But
this music you're giving me don't sound like this. So there must have been a transition somewhere.
Oh, for sure. You know, I've been doing this for so long, Walt, that I didn't want to, like, inundate you with, you know, just all this stuff. But, yeah, I came from, you know, mostly, like, a metal background. And, like I said, kind of punk metal, but with that underpinning of, you know, traditional academic studies of jazz and classical. And so always being very open-minded. And, yeah, so then, you know, in my 20s, I moved where I'm currently at here now, a couple hours away from where I'm originally from, and started working in record shops. And that was mid-90s. And, you know, that, and I'm sure you know this, you're around that environment, you start just being flooded with all these different, you know, avenues of sound and forms of expression. And if you're open to them, it's a really wonderful thing to just have all that at your disposal. And so that's when I started discovering a lot of other styles of music and even getting deeper into, say, like jazz, which I, you know, had already studied, but maybe was more of kind of like I do this at school thing. But 20s, I started becoming obsessed with Charlie Mingus and just kind of went from there. But the whole time I'm like in metal bands, black metal bands, you know, grindcore doom. And, you know, at a certain point, I'm someone who doesn't, I'm never really fulfilled staying in one spot and one form of expression. So I kept pushing and found experimental music, which is, I think, you know, the breath of what I sent you for the show. But I mean, currently, you know, I'm still active in that scene, but also back playing, you know, in metal bands again and stuff. So, yeah, lots of different things.
So when did you first leave the guitar? What'd you get into? Did you buy a synthesizer or some kind of modular thing or just fucking with tape? Or?
Well, all of the above, actually. My first instrument that I sort of took on myself, excuse me, outside of band was the drums. But then I quickly, you know, was like, okay, I'm somewhat proficient here, not trying to master the instrument, good enough to do it, you know, total punk mindset. And I'm like, I'm just going to move on to something else. And when I hit the guitar, I think I knew then that, you know, that was the one for me. So then also, you know, moved on to bass and keys and things like that. Again, just trying to become proficient at least, on everything. And so that, cause I'm an only child and, I've kind of always had solitary interests that I haven't really shared with a lot of my peer groups and stuff like that. And so I've sort of just always found things on my own and did things on my own. And, you know, just to make sure that it was at least happening and I was at least able to do something. So it's like I kind of thought, well, if I can play drums pretty good, if I can play guitar pretty good, then I can do all this myself, you know. And but yeah, as far as like moving away from conventional instruments, man, it was probably like some shitty software, you know, at first of like, oh, these oscillators really sound super sick and gross, and this is not like making conventional music, you know. And so, yeah, that kind of got me first. But then, obviously, in the synths and stuff, and then a lot of pedal noise, you know, being a guitarist, having that stuff in my arsenal anyway. And then micing up some, you know, amplified sheet metal and running it through that stuff. And bingo, you know, for me, instant harsh junk noise. And then the tape. Once I just really started working with tape, again, it was like the same equivalent with the guitar in conventional, quote-unquote, music. I was kind of found my medium with tape. Prefer, when it comes to experimental avant-garde music, whatever you want to call it, I prefer to definitely work with tape. Even though it's the biggest pain in the ass and really tedious, I love it.
Okay, we're at the end of the first hour, August 21, 2023, this is Wap Peters with special guest Shane Church. Hold tight for hour two. August 21, 2023, it's the second hour of the Wap from Pedro Show.
All right. I'm Will. He's Neil. And you've been listening to Basement Files on Cafe Racer Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in with us this Wednesday night. For that last set, we got Fun and Weird. At the very top, we had a track called The Odeon, or Oneidon. It's one of those, probably. It's a band, local band called Style King of the Week. Now, I stumbled upon their Instagram page. It's really cool, really awesome. I like the mix of experimental tape loops with that live drum machine and the analog synthesizers. So yeah, I'm keeping my eyes on them to see what they do next.
makes sense, man.
Watch for Pedro show. Start off second hour with Glass Half. As sad as it seems. Then we had Sir Richard Bishop, Coming of the Rats, Style King of the Week. Name of that band cracks me up. I don't know how to. It looks like Oneidan. O-N-E-I-D-A-N. Damn it. Sorry. No disrespect. Street Sex from Texas. After that, with Featherweight Hate. Finally, Toll. Rob of, a robe of constellations, Rob. Anyway, people, Toll and Glass Half are Shane Church projects. But we want to talk first about the stuff we played last hour. We had three tunes, three pieces from Hostage Pageant. So hip us to this, enlighten us, Brother Shane.
Yeah, Hostage Pageant was my first attempt at making solo noise. That, at least in my mind, was meant to be fully realized. You know, I'd kind of experimented and messed around with some stuff. But that was the first thing where I actually got serious about it and started really focusing on getting releases out and playing live and touring. And, yeah, it kind of always, I guess, through the last 10-plus, you know, 12-plus years that I've been active in that scene, my main solo vehicle, I guess, if you will.
And in the timeline, those tubes, Absorb, Teriate, Shatter, See, Loss of Definition, and A Frown on Your Sister's Face. Which one was first?
Oh, wow. Probably A Frown on Your Sister's Face.
Okay.
I think, yeah.
And now, you told me you were doing covers and stuff on the guitar, and then I guess keyboards and drums and everything else. But with this band, you were not channeling other bands, right? You were doing original compositions. So what was the process?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I moved on to doing original compositions even with, you know, my metal recordings and stuff like that that we had previously talked about. But, you know, even then you're kind of operating from a template, if you will, even if it is somewhat an abstract one, because it is, you know, rhythm section, guitar, bass, vocals, you know, et cetera. But with noise and avant-garde and sound art, there are no templates per se, unless you want to identify them, because it's all pretty much free reign, you know. So that was, I've left all conventional instruments behind when I started moving into that. Even, I mean, I didn't even play in any conventional bands until a couple years ago. I was only doing experimental shit. All my guitars were locked in cases unless I pulled one out and went full on Thurston with a metal file or drumstick, you know, between the strings for, you know, a noise sound source. But I wasn't playing them in a musical way. It actually took me a little while to get my chops back once I did start playing a couple years ago, because I'd left conventional instruments behind entirely for a little over a decade. So yeah, fully into making experimental music with, you know, undefined methods. I loved not having that checklist, you know, doing conventional music for so long, which obviously has its merits. I'm happy to be doing that again, but I really reached a point where I was tired of it.
Yeah, I think life's about taking turns anyway. Shit, the shift ain't that long.
No, exactly right. Just go to where it takes you, you know?
I'm curious, because these all three pieces of Hostage Pageant have titles. When does the title come in? At the end? At the beginning? In the middle?
Both. All three, I guess. Maybe not so much in the middle for me during the work in progress. But, yeah, after the fact, based on emotions that were maybe conjured that I can sort of hear upon playback, or and then sometimes it's a concept to begin with, right? You know, the title is where the feelings are coming from, you know?
Okay. And another thing, this is Man Alone, right? This is not ensemble stuff.
No, Hostage Pageant, Still Image, even Toil, you know, going back to like the black metal stuff, near the end of that project, I had drafted in a friend of mine from Australia to do synth. I mean, I was previously doing it myself, but I was a big fan of his band, and we're really good friends even now, and I wanted him involved in the band, so brought him in on synth during the later days. But yeah, like I said earlier, only child and kind of having these interests on my own for the most part, not really sharing them with a lot of friends. I was always accustomed to just, yeah, doing everything myself. I did go on to do collaborations in noise once I, you know, started meeting some of these guys and befriending them and, you know, realizing that we could share these expressions in a interesting way, and there was a reason to do it, you know. So like Glass Half is a collab, Harness is a collab.
Okay, speaking of Harness, you gave me two Harness tunes. Let's listen.
Thank you. bunch of parents. How come nobody's dancing up front here, huh? Everybody who was here last time was dancing up front. You guys are lame! So bug them.
Get up here!
They're not high enough yet. Don't be lame! Detroit's been lame for 12 fucking years.
Thank you.
Walk for Pedro show, that chunk of music started with Harness doing Mind of Stone and Water. L7 after that. It's got Larissa, the late Larissa, we lost her a bunch of years ago, but she was in Laughing Hyenas with John, too.
Yep, excellent band.
Oh, remember, yeah. Don't Be Lame is the name of the song. That's a title, right? Don't Be Lame.
Pretty simple okay, concept.
Yeah, right. She didn't play guitar. She's just a singer in this band. It's trippy.
Yeah, yeah. She played guitar with the Hyenas.
Right, right.
And L7.
And you could tell she was into Rolling Hard.
Yeah, total birthday party vibes.
Right. Spime.im with Heliotrope. And then finally, Harness. Pry open the lid of the third eye. Okay, and you mentioned Harness, and you said this was a collab.
Yeah, that's a collab with a friend of mine, Luke Tandy, from Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton, Ohio, okay.
Land of GBV, Breeders, Brainiac, Zap, Slave, Ohio Players.
You know that. That's love right. Town. No, Zap and fucking Ohio Players. Fire, yeah. Right?
I love that town so much. Prior to meeting my wife, I was on my way to moving there. I literally packed up my house, given my 2-week notice.
Yeah.
But if things worked out that way, and they worked out for the best, so no regrets. But I feel connected to that town for sure.
Well, okay. And how'd you meet him, on tour or something?
Yeah, okay. Through the noise scene. You know, he
sure.
Was
no. People ask me, hey, what's the old days about? I say it was about people. And
yeah.
I think the new days is about people
and his connection,
too.
You know. has to come from that for me. It has to be like a grassroots thing. If things feel too structured and therefore corporate, you know, with
like
the way shows are set up, it loses. I don't know. You know, I know it's part of the necessary evils of what we all do, but like it to me, I lose interest when it comes like that. It feels a little sterile. I like the grassroots, you know, sleeping on people's floors and that kind of thing, that aspect of it, which is how I met Luke. Luke's always, you know, he's a fellow record store owner there in Dayton. Skeleton Dust Records, probably close to their sixth year at this point. And he's always been someone who was running house venues and trying to support, you know, touring musicians and also the local scene. And so, you know, ended up playing and staying in his house by being someone that was, you know, booked at a show there and just really hit it off with he and his wife, fiance at the time. And just became really close friends, and so then we, you know, he asked me to be a part of a project that he and his brother were doing at the time called Orgasmic Response Unit, only as a live member, and so that was a lot of fun, and that's when we kind of, like, actually started working together sonically, and then, Harness actually, funny enough, started out as, you know, our first recording on a split tape with Glass Half. It was just harsh noise, you know. We were both kind of, Luke and I both really just focusing on that at the time, and so we just kind of like brought, you know, our projects together for like a hybrid, and then it became more conceptual and specifically became a tape music project. So after that first release, everything that Harness has done is pre-recorded and cassette manipulation.
You know that Wire song off their third album, Map Reference, whatever.
Off of 154?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
There's a line in there where he goes, Harness fitted. Now, we use all that, but fitted, that tripped me out. I know it's the Queen's English, but damn that.
Right, still.
Half, Glass Half and Toll, are those Man Alone or are those collabs?
So, Toil was actually prior to any of the noise
Toil,
stuff.
Toil, not Toll.
No, it's cool, yeah. It was prior to any of the noise stuff. That was a one-man black metal thing that I did.
Okay.
Like I said, near the end, I had drafted in someone, a guy who went by the name of Wraith from Australia, from a band there called Nazul. And, but yeah, prior to that, it was all one man. But then fast forward to Glass Half, Luke Tandy, my friend, again, that I do Harness with, he has a brother, also active in the scene, named Nate Tandy, who's now living in Hanoi. He now lives in Vietnam. During the time he was still here stateside, we were also doing a project together, and that's Glass Half.
There's a noise scene in Vietnam.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's certainly playing.
He's part of it? So, That's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Brother Shane, sorry, but we're at the end of the second hour, August 21, 2023. This is Wap Pedro, so special guest Shane Church. Hold tight for hour 3. August 21, 2023. It's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro show.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. Start off third hour with Crooked Necks doing Poison in the Seed. Greg Siegel after that with Daily. Crooked Necks again with Streets with Teeth. And Cheer Accident out of Chicago with Theme. And then the last prod's worth of music you gave me is Still Image. And this is Cloud View. We'll hear another couple tunes later. But first, hip us to Crooked Necks, Brother Shane.
Yeah, Crooked Necks. So when I was coming out of the black metal scene, because I was just really fed up with, you know, a lot of just the BS that can be associated with that scene. And then also, you know, like I said earlier, just being tired of doing conventional music. I was also getting tired of that. So I thought, well, if I'm going to continue to play conventional music, at least for the time being, let me step out of the metal scene for a while. So another friend of mine, Andy Krupinski, who was also active in some black metal bands at the time in Northern Virginia. He's a Fairfax guy outside of D.C.
Dave Grohl. I think Dave Grohl's Fairfax.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Same. I mean, that's a great town too, man. It was a great scene there a few years ago for sure. I don't know about now. But, yeah, so Andy is no longer there. He's now in Austin, owns his own donut shop. Shout outs to Andy K's Donuts. And, yeah, so we were sort of like, we never recorded in the same room, Crooked Necks. You know, he and I decided, let's just do something that's not metal. And, I think we were subconsciously pulling a lot of our black metal influences. They were kind of like trailing off of us, if you will. So they were still kind of there, but they weren't intentional, you know? They weren't deliberate. They were more residual and just sort of like remaining, you know, impressions of what we have been doing for the years prior. But our attempt is to make something, you know, akin to the Chameleons and Echo and the Bunnymen and stuff like that. But Andy was like, but I, you know, I'm only a metal vocalist, and so I only know how to do metal vocals. So we were just kind of like, well, paper, that sounds kind of fucked, right? But like, let's see what happens. And it kind of worked. And,
when you say that, do you mean like the Cookie Monster thing?
More like the kind of like the black metal thing where it's more like screeching, you know, like higher pitch.
I remember the Stooges doing this Hellfest in southern France, and that all the bands had this Cookie Monster thing.
And I'm currently in a death metal band. We're going by the name Desiccated right now, but we haven't, you know, really landed on it yet. We're still tracking the demos, so there's time to really put that in concrete. But yeah, you know, so I definitely am in bands that have the guttural Cookie Monster vocals. But like you said, sometimes you go to these fests and it's just so, it's so one note, you know, one trick pony. It's like, this shit just, nobody really stands out because it all kind of sounds the same, you know?
Humans do this. Like they want to shout about individuality and stuff, and even they're born with different fingerprints.
Right.
So it's right there in the DNA. But when it comes to expressing themselves, they want to get in that herd.
Yeah, man. The safety in numbers, you know? Safety in numbers. I've always been willing to just throw that shit out the window. Yep. And even if you fall flat on your face, just be willing to take a chance. But at least do something that maybe people take note of, you know? I mean, it's just, why else, besides fulfilling your own internal creative impulse, why else would you really do it, you know? I mean, like you said, if you're only doing it to just be one of several of the same kind of band, I just don't see the point in that. You know, it takes a lot of work and a lot of time, as you well know. Why do it if that's the payoff?
And Still Image.
Yeah, Still Image. So that ended up coming, obviously, after Crooked Necks. So basically the trajectory, you know, I guess the first thing I did that anybody would probably know would probably be Toil, you know, the black metal stuff. There was stuff prior to that, but that's the first stuff that actually had, I guess, like proper releases. Toil into Crooked Necks into the noise stuff. And noise stuff primarily, mostly harsh. And then as I went on, I ended up doing Still Image most recently in the noise stuff. And that's, again, purely tape music. Same concept as Harness. I think Harness, maybe we intentionally, you know, we kind of thought of ourselves as like music concrete for harsh heads kind of thing. But Still Image to me, I don't want it to be harsh at all. I want it to be purely about found sound, music concrete, field recordings, natural sound. But everything is on either extended tapes or tape loops, and it's pre-recorded by myself or is found sound. in the environment, and it's put on these loops in differing lengths and are played back in a very composed way. As a matter of fact, that is the one noise project that I do, going back to what you and I were talking about earlier,
yeah,
that actually is composed like a song would be. So I do like 3-4 takes of each still image, and then each still image piece, rather, excuse me, and then pick, you know, the best take. Whereas a lot of the other stuff, like Hostage Pageant and stuff like that, it's more like a stream of consciousness. Hook it up, press record, go.
Performance.
And then cut out anything else that, you know, doesn't work later on. But still image is already premeditated and,
kind of scripted.
Scripted, and to me, the point would be discipline. You know?
Sure.
There's so much, like, lack of that, and not to a fault in harsh noise. It needs that kind of like unhinged, like freewheeling, what the fuck's happening, chaotic environment for me.
Sure.
For me, like when I get into stuff like Stockhausen and Cage and Ferrari and Zanakis, the studious, the composed, the you know, restrained nature of that.
Throbbing Gristle too would go all over the place.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, look at that, you know, the early output.
The first
annual report. Jazz funk, it's totally
and
different.
And then jazz funk hits, yeah, right. Man, that song 666, is that a it's got a weird feel.
So much of that shit is still unsettling today.
Wow, very unsettling, yeah. Let's listen to some still in.
Another day of 80 You become your own boogeyman. Still looking for the boogeyman. Since you were 7 years old. Looking underneath your bed. Looking in the back of the closet. Just another day of 80 proof. Dragging your left foot. You're dragging your right foot. 29 years of torturing yourself. We'll be right back.
For Pedro's show, last music for this edition, Still Image with Undercurrent and Carnage Asada. Their new album, Blood of Thorns, is this tune. Still Image again, Linda and Mirror. Okay, and what's current right now for you?
Currently working in, like I said, a death metal band right now here with some local guys, and also another local friend of mine that I've known for years. Within the past year, we've started doing something called a Red Light in June, and it's just the two of us doing like a guitar duo, ambient drone, experimental sort of thing with projections. So it's an audiovisual project. We don't really have any intentions on recording. We only really perform seasonally. We're both business owners and pretty busy and stuff, so we just kind of do it when we can. And it's so we kind of – that's a little bit of a different sort of special project, again, because it's like if you don't catch it live, you know, you won't even know what it sounds like. And then working on some Doom stuff with a couple friends of mine as well, and obviously still working in experimental more privately these days. I still do a lot of that stuff, but I'm really bad to recoil from scenes. I think anyone that's followed my past can see that. I don't know. I tend to jump ship sometimes. And so right now I'm not really like doing anything about touring or releasing any music through the noise scene, but I am still kind of doing some home experiments, you know.
Is there a place on the internet where people can hear your music?
No place that's cohesive. I've never been someone who wanted a Bandcamp. No offense to anyone who does. I mean, I realize, you know, that is a necessary evil these days. No SoundCloud or anything like that. I would just say if anyone is interested, you know, there's stuff on YouTube from the projects that you and I have mentioned. And then of course anyone, you know, could hit me up, liquidtelegraph@gmail.com. If anyone's interested, I'd be happy to give them more information about where they can maybe track some stuff down. There's still some physical copies. I've always been more of a physical copy guy, I guess because of, you know, just my age and being a record store guy too. It's very important to me. So, yeah, I could probably always steer someone in the right direction if need be.
And your record store is in Bristol, Virginia?
Yeah, Watt. It's Bristol, Virginia. It's called Ceremonial Sound. It's a vinyl-only boutique.
Is there a website for Ceremonial Sound?
Yeah, ceremonialsound.net.
Okay, so maybe that's a way.
and then I'm also on Discogs, you know.
I'm thinking about those listeners in Sarajevo, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah. They can definitely do the .net, and you know, there's a breadcrumb trail there to, like, the Discogs store, and anyone that's on Discogs can find me on there as well as far as, like, a seller for the shop. And, yeah, if anyone's ever in town, feel free to swing by.
Well, look, you get this new band. This sounds like an ensemble. So you're going to record maybe an album?
EP right now, for sure. Hopefully there's a lot more to come on down the road. But, yeah, we're actually the instrumental tracks are wrapped up.
I want to put the invite out right now. When you get music ready, can you please bring?
I'd absolutely be happy to.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, keep on keeping on. Please, brother. It's been August 21, 2023 edition of the Waffle Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.